This is Kelly Blewett. I'm joined tonight by Brian Volk, a physician at Cincinnati Children's Hospital and Cincinnati native, who also holds a Master in Fine Arts from Seattle Pacific University. Medicine and writing have been his passions for years, and tonight we will have the pleasure of discussing his new book, Attending Others, A Doctor's Education in Bodies and Words. This collection of 15 essays details Brian's experiences as an attending physician in Cincinnati, on Native American reservations out west, and in Honduras. Welcome, Brian.
Well, thank you very much.
So can you start by telling us a little bit about the scope of this book?
Well, in the book, I try to catalog what I learned about medicine after I finished my formal education, which turns out to be pretty much everything. When we, as students in medical school and even during residency, are learning about patients, learning to help patients and deal with patients and enter into their lives, we begin to learn that there's much more than what we receive from the books, and we encounter these others who are to us mysterious and strange and sometimes challenging, and we begin to learn how it is that we apply all this book learning to the patient in front of us. And that requires a lot of attention. That also requires the skill of figuring out how I give my mind to this, to what's going on in front of me, but also how I give my heart to what's going on in front of me. And that's a real challenge for us.
On the topic of giving your heart to what is in front of you, you write that love is not something that's often discussed, but it's something that you sort of aspire to feel toward your patients.
Yes, I often tell my residents that they have to love their patients, even the ones they can't bring themselves to like. And I think that most people can understand the difference between those two. There's a long tradition in medicine, dating back to Sir William Osler, that says that the doctor should have a stoic approach to his or her patients, and that it's best not to get too emotionally involved so that he or she can bring the best intellectual approach to what's going on. And that's true as far as it goes. I think that's very good advice. But how that gets embodied by various physicians depends on where their heart is in all this. And being able to attend to the emotional component of what's going on is a very important part of medicine as well. Being able to recognize that there's more going on here than the pathology of the particular disease. And that's a skill that is not easily taught. It can be learned. It can be learned by example, but it's hard to put that in a book and say, here, this is how you do this. So, of course, I go off and write a book about it.
And the book opens, I think, with maybe two really strong examples of patients that have stayed with you, left a kind of residue on mm-hmm. your practice. Mm-hmm. I wondered if you wanted to maybe introduce one of those stories and explain how that kind of brings these larger issues to bear.
Well, you're talking about two cases that didn't turn out well in the sense that for a pediatrician, the experience of a child death is actually quite difficult. There are some subspecialties in pediatrics that death is more common, but for most of us who work in pediatrics, it's certainly a less common phenomenon than those who deal with adults. Brian was a boy that I met very briefly when I was a resident in Cleveland at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital. He came in the middle of the night. The story was that he had been sick. We didn't realize how sick. We were taking care of him, and he essentially had a cardiac arrest in front of us, and we were unable to revive him. It was an experience for me because I was a pediatrician, not yet a parent, and it was the first inkling I had into what it meant for a parent to lose a child because the mother was there. It was understandably a very painful experience for her. And later, we met, I and the mother, to go over what information we had and try to give her a sense as to what had happened, which did not actually solve all the issues. And it was more a matter of being there, being present to her. There wasn't information I could give her that said, to say, this can make all this better. But the interaction, I think, was probably more important. And that's part of the lesson that I received from that encounter, was that presence is often more important than anything you actually say, and what it truly means for a parent to lose a child.
And it seems like that topic of presence comes up many times in the book in lots of different contexts, particularly in Honduras.
Yes. The title of the book is Attending Others, and the play on attending is that that's what a physician who is in charge of the service is referred to, the attending physician. But attending, by definition, has really three different meanings. It can be to pay attention to, it can be to be present to, and it can be to serve or assist. And I like to play on all three of those throughout the book, particularly in the work that I did in Honduras, which was through a group that has roots here in Cincinnati, Shoulder to Shoulder. There were many situations in which the best that I could do was be present. We didn't have the high-tech equipment to help some of the patients who were in isolated villages. We had medicines that we brought with us. We hope they were the right ones. You can never exactly bring all the correct medications or devices with you, especially if you're traveling by backpack. There's a series of permanent clinics there that we can refer patients to, but as I talk about in the book, there's one couple where the man was blind, the woman was deaf, and to walk up and down the mountains to actually get to the clinic would have been far more than they could possibly do. So the best that we were able to do was leave a few medications, talk to them, and be present, be witness, bear witness to what was going on in front of us.
And I think that idea of bearing witness and seeing and maybe recreating in words and pictures resonates with the cover image on the book.
Yes. The cover image is a painting by Tim Lowley, who's an artist in Chicago, whose work I greatly admire and have written about in small pieces before. But as the book came together, I really wanted to make sure that his art would be included in this. So the cover is a painting called Pillar, and it depicts Tim's daughter, Tema, who is now 30 years old, but on the first or second day of life, she had a complete cardiac arrest, was resuscitated, and has suffered a great deal of neurologic damage as a consequence to that. So she's in a wheelchair. She does not communicate verbally, but she's an enormously attractive and wonderful person. And she is, as I say in the book, sort of the ultimate other. She is someone who, for me, where the world revolves around communication and words, I can't speak to her in words. And Tim has devoted most of his art to painting Tema in various situations. And this is the sort of thing that could be exploitive in other situations, but Tim just does a marvelous job. So Pillar is Tema asleep. She is wrapped up in blankets. She looks very peaceful. You can tell, or at least I can tell from looking at her, that she's not entirely normal in terms of the contours of her face. But she looks like a stunning image like a pillar of fire, someone that calls your attention. And again, I think of her as the ultimate other, a true challenge for me to get to know. There's a frontispiece illustration called Carry Me from Tim Lowley that also speaks to me in many ways. It's a painting. In the book, it's rendered in black and white, but the actual painting has lots of browns and creams and whites in it. There are six women looking directly up, which means directly at you, the viewer, mm-hmm. and they are carrying Tema in their arms. And what gets to me from this is that it is the patient who actually gathers the community together, the community of carers together, and that though she is a burden that is light because there are six people carrying her. In other situations, I have talked to people, particularly people who are older, who say that they don't want to become a burden to other people. And I say, why would you want to stop now? You've been a burden all your life to other people. Our lives are messy and complicated. And Tema is just a way to remind us that from her experience, we can learn what it would be like to actually let other people take our burdens and in that way gather the community together.
Throughout your career, you have had these dual interests of medicine and writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, how being a writer has shaped your practice as a doctor, and how being a doctor has shaped your practice as a writer, which you've sort of spoken to a bit, but I wondered if you wanted to say more.
One of the great things about being a physician is that people come and tell you their stories. And William Carlos Williams noted this and often said that you got a sense of the whole community from the stories that you heard. The stories that people will tell their physicians are often stories that they will share with their spouses or their minister or spiritual director or whatever. So a physician is in a particular position of privilege to receive such stories. And the physician is supposed to pay attention to those so that he or she can figure out what's going on and how to assist the person in front of him or her. The writer needs to pay attention as well and figure out what's going on with the character, what's going on in the situation. A story is a bit more than a narrative. A story actually really requires some sort of conflict. And when somebody's coming into the doctor in pain or with a worry or in desperate need of mind relief, there's a conflict going on there already. So there are active plot-driven stories going on even as the patient enters the room. So these inform each other in ways that have to deal with story, with paying attention. Some of my favorite writers are those who were trained in the British model of medicine, such as Abraham Verghese, who did much of his training in the United States, but the original part of his medical training was in the British model in India and elsewhere. From that particular way of being trained, pays attention to the telling detail, the physical exam, the thing that gives away the story, and it shows up in his writing in such wonderful ways. And I would like to be that good, but I do my best.
Reminds me of Bart's idea of the punctum.
Yes, yes. There are all sorts of wonderful connections between medicine and writing that would be so much better if they weren't so demanding, if they weren't such jealous lovers. Each one wants all your attention, and it's a challenge to figure out what part of that calling you're going to pay attention to that day or that part of the day.
And it seems like that's part of what is negotiated in the book, is navigating that time between writing and practice and medicine.
Yes, I hope that doesn't come off too much as complaining, because it's a great dilemma to have, but it's nonetheless a dilemma.
Maybe you would like to say just a few words about the project that you're working on now, which has been a long project.
It's probably been too long since I've been working on it, since 2009. Some of the stories in the book talk about my experience working with the Navajo in the Indian Health Service, and since going back out to work with various Indian Health Service facilities on the Navajo Reservation in Arizona and New Mexico. There are a number of inherited conditions on the western part of the Navajo Reservation that are either unique to or unusually common there. I won't go into the details, but the reason they're more common is in part due to events of about 150 years ago, the so-called Long Walk, when Kit Carson rounded up the Navajo and led them off the reservation where they were going to learn how to be farmers. That didn't work well. And through a whole complex series of events, that led to the cascade that made these diseases more common. I remember taking care of some of these patients before we even had names for their diseases. Others we did, but had no cure. So what I've been doing for the past 7 years or so is collecting stories from the families, from the doctors, from the researchers, reading deeply in Navajo history and culture, and trying to get a sense as to what the human effect of such a history is. As a friend of mine said, what you're really trying to ask is, when is a war actually over? Because the events of 150 years ago in a military action are still embodied in the lives of children today.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on to talk about your new book.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I've been talking with Dr. Brian Volk about his new book, Attending Others, A Doctor's Education in Bodies and Words. For more information, visit our website at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. This is Kelly Blewett.